And the idea that God can actually be conquered is by pure devotion and becomes the servant of the devotee in great ecstasy. This is a phenomenal concept. So we owe much of that coming out. Of course, it's always been known to the great devotees, but it coming out publicly is via Jayadev Goswami. And he did write Gita Govinda, very intimate Madhurya Lila pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Not for, as Prabhupada said, one time they made, they asked Narottam, who was on that, oh, that was in San Diego, but an early Prabhupada disciple, Narottam Prabhu, cook from Bombay, the incense man. So he asked Prabhupada, how much camphor should we put in lugloos? Prabhupada said, not enough that any mortal can taste it. So it's a refined, you know, taste. So for those of us, certainly myself, Gita Govinda, what can we understand? And he wanted, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to print Gita Govinda. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, all right, you can print one copy for yourself. Keep it and read it. So anyway, something about Jiva Goswami. Jayadev Goswami. All right, we can, and we should remember that we come in such a noble line when we read about these. Because here we are, you know, where you go out on the street and they say, get a job, get a haircut. Not so much anymore, but, you know. And the family's saying this and that, and we wonder that, you know, where's my health care? Where's my bank balance? We're going to talk about that in a minute. But we should remember that we come in a line of great, saintly, refined, sophisticated, not only intellectual, but far beyond that, deep personalities who've all come to, kings and great scholars, and they've all come to the same conclusion. Krishna's tu bhagavan swayam, like, you know, pure devotional service, ahaitukiya pratiyata. They've all come to that same conclusion, Brajalila. So that we, what is it, there's a Chanaka Pandit says that if you go to the Aborigines, if you throw some jewels in front of them, they won't even bend over and pick them up, but they'll get the gunja berries, a little, because that's a little native. Of course, we also use for dressing Giri Govardhan. But they don't, you know, they pearls before swines. So what can we do in Kali Yuga? But we should remember that we're on the right. You know, if you take a pan balance, who are you going to follow? You know, whatever the latest pop star is, or whoever the latest, you know, until it's revealed. I remember going to see, not Stilson Judah, who was actually a very nice man, that other guy, Dimmock, Professor Dimmock, University of Chicago. You mention his name, of course he's passed away now, but to mention his name, and Sanskrit scholars around the world tremble. He was the modern day Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And we went to see him to get a quote about Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Myself and Parvajekacharya, who was a brahmachari at the time, Chicago. So we went to see him. And we arrived at the appointed time, appointed day. We had an appointment, you know, it was, everything was scheduled. And he was so drunk that I swear to you, he could barely get the door open, and he, oh, right, you know. Oh. I mean, he was just, what do they say? Plastered, yes. He was pickled to the gills, you know. He was just, you know, useless. So even he recognized, he was apologetic. He said, oh, you know, I'll try tomorrow, you know. And we went back tomorrow, and the next day, and he'd evidently sobered up a bit. And as a sidelight, but I mean, so who is he? And who, you know, you read, who are these people? You read about their actual activities, and just, it's embarrassing. I mean, I could give a whole, I mean, you know, we could just spend a little time on Bill Clinton. It's just embarrassing. You know, a saintly person, a leader, his word should be truth. And this man is such a, you know, I mean, it just goes, they're all liars and thieves. Be that as it may. So we should remember who we're following. And who we are sharing their conclusions and their aims and their goals. Just requires a little clear-headed intelligence. Just to finish on Professor Dimmock, and then we'll chant the Sanskrit. But Professor Dimmock, he actually said about Prabhupada's Gita, he said that if I could have written this one book, Bhagavad Gita, as it is, Prabhupada's Gita, He said, I would consider my entire scholastic career complete. It would be the cap, the apex, the param gatim of my scholastic endeavors if I could have written this Bhagavad Gita. And as we know, Prabhupada was just getting warmed up. You know, I mean, Bhagavad Gita, Shrimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamritas. So, okay. No, oh, there it is. Are we on the same? Yeah, we're on the same verse. That helps. Asam shakta sarire asmin amunot padite grihe apatye dravane vapi ka kuryan mamatam buddha asam shakta sarire asmin Omunod padate grihe apatye dravane vapi kakuryan mamatam buddha asam shakta sarire smin omunod padate grihe apatye dravane vapi Kakuyan mamatam buddha.
Asam shakta sarire smin.
Asam shakta sarire smin.
Apatye dravine vapi.
Asam sakta sarire smin. Asam shakta sarire smin Omunot padate grihe Apatye dravane vapi Kakuyan mamatam buddha Ladies Asam shakta sarire smin Omunot padate grihe Apatye dravane vapi Kakuryan mamatam buddha
Asam shakta sarire smin
Amunot padate grihe Apatye dravane vapi Kakuryan mamatam buddha Asam shakta Being unattached, sarire, to the body, asmin, this, amuna, by such a bodily conception, utpadate, produced, grihe, house, apatye, children, dravane, wealth, va, or api, also ka, who kuryat, would do mamatam, affinity buddha, learned person. Translation: how can a highly learned person who has absolutely no affinity for the bodily conception of life be affected by the bodily conception in regard to house, children, wealth, and similar other bodily productions? Also, you say, how can a highly learned person who has absolutely no affinity for the bodily conception of life be affected by the bodily conception in regard to house, children, wealth, and similar other bodily productions. Purport. The Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are certainly meant to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. However, by such activities, one does not factually satisfy the Lord. Rather, with the sanction of the Lord, one tries to satisfy his own senses. In other words, materialists who are especially interested in sense gratification are given permission or license to enjoy sense gratification by executing the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. This is called Trigunya Vishayi Veda. The Vedic performances are based on three modes of material nature. Those who are elevated above the material condition are not at all interested in such Vedic performances. Rather, they are interested in the higher duties of transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such devotional service is called Nistragunya. Devotional service to the Lord has nothing to do with the material conception of bodily comfort. Omaganata marandasya ganagana salakaya chakshushu mudatangena tazarishi guruve namaha. So, of course, we have Lord Vishnu instructing Prithu Maharaj, and you have sort of Indra cowering a little behind Lord Vishnu because Prithu is very upset. You know the story. We know the line there that Indra was trying to steal the sacrificial horses, so many things. Sacrificial horse. And Indra is very, Prithu Maharaj was very angry about it. The point is that what is the use of all of this? I remember when I was taking a drafting course in high school, they said if you want to draw a straight line by freehand, what you do is you don't watch as you're doing it. You keep your eye on the point and you look where you're going and just draw. And that's the best way to draw a straight line. If you know the object, you're more likely to hit it efficiently. So, if one knows the object of life, then all these other, there are so many other distractions. We have to be able to step back. Just like Prithu Maharaj got swept up in the moment. And we all do. We're not, as Prabhupada said, we are not dull stones. We have emotions, usually brewing just under the surface. My experience is that people respond, truth is not as powerful as emotion. Emotion is much more powerful motivator in the age of Kali. People are just... Kripa Mayi, very nice devotee, was married to Indra Dumna Maharaj before he took sannyas. She's a family counselor, got her degree. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But she was saying how difficult just to communicate. She says it's not uncommon that you'll have the husband is sincere, the wife is sincere, the kids are sincere, but everybody's at each other's throat. And, well, I thought you said you meant this, and you should have done this, and I sent you a signal. Hey, I didn't read it, you know. A lot of it is just people are such emotional pins and needles and basket cases that just to communicate is a difficult thing. So we have to be aware that we have all these different... I was saying the other day, C fibers firing. We've got A to Z firing. And it's not so easy for us to... So we need that ability. I remember, I don't mean to embarrass him, but it was actually good advice. I remember Swavas saying to... He was leaving someone in charge, and he was going to India. And I always remember this when I was a temple president. It was very good advice. Swavas said, whoever was... You may not even remember this. Whoever was in charge, as you were... They said, any last pearls of wisdom... And Swavas said, whatever happens, don't react. But it's very good advice. Because the first thing you get hit with, you say, he said that. Well, wait a minute. And then you find out there's one side of the story and two sides of the story and three sides of the story. And it wasn't really... But, we all just react. Whatever it is, it just hits us and, we're ready to... Whatever it is. I remember seeing a frog. And he was having like a... I don't know what the right word is, but like a Brahmachari at a Maha feast. He was, some other flies were going past him left and right. And you know how they whack with their tongue? This frog was on a roll. Wham, wham, wham. He was just getting them left and right. And I don't know what the enjoyment level of a frog is. At least I don't remember. I'm sure I've been there at some point in time, but at least in this life, by Krishna's grace, I don't remember. But he was like, you know, like whacking samosas out of the sky. He was just having a fantastic time. And then a bee came along, you know, and he was on such a roll, he just whack hit the bee, and they swallowed it. And you saw this, he was going through all these changes, you know, you can just imagine, you know, because he was just reacting. So we have to be able to step back and see things through the lens of Vedic knowledge. That's what it means to be, you know, what is it, introspective sages, the Shirsha Upanishad says. We have to be able to drop down the glasses and say, oh, wait a minute, that's, now things are in focus. I remember when I was a kid, I had an older brother, I still have an older brother, who, in the dutiful role of an older brother, tortured me regularly. And he was all threefold mysteries rolled into one. And as a mental anxiety, I remember I was like 6 years old, and he had me watch, you know, Bride of Frankenstein or whatever, you know, some horror movie. I can't remember what it was, by Krishna's grace. But I remember being petrified, and I had my own bedroom. So he slept in one room, I was in another room. And I remember being sleeping, you know, and I woke up in the middle of the night. We had a big bay window outside, you know, big window into a garden. And I remember there it was, the Bride of Frankenstein. And she was trying to get in my window. And I could see her arms and her head, and I could hear her howling, and I could hear her scratching at the glass. And I thought, if I just inhale or exhale, she'll know I'm here. And I'm a tasty morsel. And I remember lying for what seemed, I don't know how long it was, but I remember for hours, petrified. That, you know, at any minute, you know, if I just, at any minute, that was it. And then as the sun came up, I began to see, hang on a minute, there was a clothesline outside that window. And there was a branch that had fallen off a tree and caught on the clothesline, and it was swinging in the wind. And what I thought were arms were just the branches, and what I thought was the head was, you know, the trunk of the thing, and the scratching was the branches on the glass, and the wind was howling through, you know, the whole thing. And I thought, oh, jeez, you know. But once, and Prabhupada often uses this example of fog, and as soon as the sun arrives, the fog dissipates and everything becomes clear. So we have to see things. Prabhupada used to say that I was sitting right, well, actually in the other temple room, Prabhupada said we are sitting on a fence, and we can fall this way or fall that way. Whichever way we lean, we'll fall if you're sitting on a fence. So Prabhupada said this is the, we are marginal potency, and we have free will. And if we lean towards Maya, we will fall into Maya. And if we lean towards Krishna, Prabhupada said Krishna will certainly pull us. So we have that free will, but it requires the ability to see. So here, Krishna is saying to Preeti Maharaj, you know, don't all of this, you're supposed to be a learned transcendentalist, and you're affected by all this false ego and prestige and all of this. You know, how is it possible that you become influenced by all of these things? I was thinking that Krishna is known as Hari, and we know it means takes away. And Prabhupada always says takes away all of our, you know, material assets, but ultimately takes away all of our misery as well. And there's a, what is the word? You know, there's a connection, not synergy, I'm trying to think of what the word is, but there's a connection. As those miseries go away, as those material things go away, guess what? By an exact ratio, we become happy, we become peaceful. It's like the, huh? Exactly, I was thinking the law of unintended consequences, but inverse, it's an inverse relationship. It's counterintuitive, but that's what actually is going on in this world. And I was thinking that the just like an addict, if you see a drunk or a heroin addict, all they want is for you to give them heroin or to give them a drug, you know, whatever it is, so they can get some Ripple or whatever it is, you know, Gallo or whatever, Thunderbird, whatever they're into, you know, mouthwash, whatever it is. But you know, as a neutral party who's not influenced that, you know, this is the last thing in the world they need, isn't it? It's the last thing in the world they need. And they're thinking it's the one thing. They'll give up their wife, their job, their health, everything. They're convinced it's the one thing they need. But you know, it's the last thing they need. So Krishna's Hari. He knows what we need. The last thing in the world we need. I was listening to a tape. Prabhupada said, if I only had $1 million, then I could serve Krishna very nicely. You know, and we all have those moments that we think, if I just had, you know, new wife, old wife, back, whatever it is. We're all thinking, you know, if I just had my youth, if I just had money, if I just had a new house, if only the weather was warm, you know, whatever it was. We're all thinking like that. So I was thinking here, the last line of the purport, it says, devotional service to the Lord has nothing to do with material conception of bodily comfort. When we hear that Krishna's hari and he takes away, it's a little bit frightful thing, you know, that it's a fact that Krishna has 100 hands. And he can give with his 100 hands, but he can take with his 100 hands. Prabhupada's father used to tell him that. And that's frankly what it's all about in this world. That is the process of devotional service. Oh, we'll get to that in just a second. But what I was thinking was that I always remember this. I'm usually, by Krishna's grace, I get to serve in the free food booth. Since the first LA Rath Yatra, Mahanta has put up with me all these years. But it's just, for so many reasons, it's an ecstatic engagement. But I remember something, I slipped out, I think it was Jayadvaita Maharaj was in the question and answer booth used to be nearby, and you know now they've changed the configuration of it, so we have to move all the booths around. But I remember walking up to Jayadvaita Maharaj, because I like to hear the devotees how they're preaching. And I remember, you know, he was sannyasi and powerful, and he was, you know, on one of, you know, hellfire and brimstone, letting them have it. And he got to this point, he said, the essence of, now I was standing behind, I've mentioned this before, but these two huge women, I mean, no offense, they could have been men, but they were, it's an in-house crowd, they were land whales. They were very, very large. And there's a reason I mention this. And so I was trying to see around them, you know, and I caught a snippet of the conversation. And I heard Jadaraj Maharaj say, the essence of spiritual life, the essence of all spiritual practice, the beginning step is to understand that we are not this body. And the one land whale turned to the other lady and said, boy, that's a relief. And you could tell on one level, they were just that, you know, that I don't have to, all this business of trying to be, you know, slim down or this, or, you know, it's all based on my youth or what. It's actually a huge relief that if our happiness does not depend on material conditions, it is a fantastic relief. Otherwise, we are, as they used to say when I was growing up, cruising for a bruising. If that's our goal in life. I remember we were sitting preparing the Sunday feast. This man across, this guy was fantastic. Krishna arranged that we had the archetype materialist across, right next door to us, and so many things were happening to him. But this particular day, I remember, you could tell it was Sunday, which is their, I mean, they work all, what do they say, TGIF, thank God it's Friday? Because they, you know, they're grinding it out, they finally come to the weekend. And really, they try to enjoy as much as possible. You know the whole, I don't want to spend time on that foolishness. But Sunday, if they can just rest. They can just, you know, this guy, you could tell, he sat out, he put out the lawn chair. It was summertime, Ann Arbor, Michigan, beautiful Midwest day. All he wanted to do was be left alone and read his paper. That's all he wanted. You could tell, the sun, as far as a big lump of newspaper. So he had a big Sunday paper, and all he wanted to do was read his paper. So he sat down, you could just feel, you know, the waves of tension come off him as he sat down. He opened the paper. Immediately the kids came out and wanted to, they were all over. They wanted to play, wanted to, and he said, oh, jeez, you could see the. So, all right, just to keep the kids busy, he went out of the garage, he pulled out the inflatable inner tube, he blew the thing up, filled it full of water, got the rubber ducks, got the. Okay, fine. Kids are okay. They're off his back. He sat down. Oh, man. Began to open the paper again. The wife comes out. You could hear in your ear, you know, I don't know what you, but you could tell, oh, it's a beautiful day, let's have a picnic, he got the keys of the car, he goes off the supermarket, he comes back, he drags out the barbecue, he gets a picnic table, he gets all little tent, he gets the whole thing set up. Okay, now the wife's happy, the kids are happy. So, by this, each of these events has taken some time. By this time, it's afternoon, he sits down again, he's just about to read the paper. Anyone who's lived in the Midwest in the summertime, the humidity builds up, and just, he finally sat down. It poured rain. And the fire went out in the barbecue. The wife was uptight. The kids were screaming in the pool. The paper was soaked. He was fried. So, you know, and that's a simple example, but if it depends on our health, and depends on who we are, and depends on the weather, and depends on how much money, what's in our bank balance, you never get a perfect storm. You never get a harmonic convergence of all those factors. And even if you do get it, you're in anxiety, you're going to lose it. How long can you maintain it? And even while you've got it, it doesn't satisfy. So the simple point here is, if this is a traditional theme running through the Bhagavatam, they do this compare and contrast. Just like we have here, we have Indra and Prithu. You can choose which path you want to take. Or you have Dvarsa Muni and you have Ambarish. One has all mystic powers. Ambarish is, you know, on one hand, just like Prabhupada said, his god brothers used to wonder, how will this putrefied man do anything? Because Prabhupada was a householder. You know, he was been a householder for many years. How will this putrefied man? That's what Prabhupada joked, they used to consider householders. And yet Prabhupada came out and did everything because he had full faith in the instruction of his spiritual master and in the holy name. So, you know, you have this comparison. Ambarish, he was a simple king on one hand. But he, so much so that Dvarsa Muni has to surrender to him. So many. You have Duryodhana and Arjuna. So we have a choice. That's my simple point. The four Kumaras, Lord Brahma and the four Kumaras were discussing. All of a sudden, Krishna appeared as the Hamsa avatar. And Lord Brahma asked, who are you? Now, the four Kumaras could immediately understand something about the form, that form. Now, what they could understand, for me, what do we know? But the four Kumaras could immediately understand that if Brahma is the, you know, Brahma, what is it, Teni Brahma Hridaya Adikavya, he's the first Adikavya, he's the first living entity, and from him all creation flows. If there's a form that Lord Brahma does not know, what does that mean? It means that there must be a whole form, dimension, that is beyond Lord Brahma, that is transcendental. They can immediately understand that there is a transcendental dimension and a transcendental world. That is our mission. That is our great gift. That happiness is not in this body. It is not in this world. It's a whole other spiritual dimension. I remember chanting New Year's Eve. I love downtown San Diego because the route we go chanting on, there's several bars, you know, when everybody's lined up, all the kids. One of them is called, and Druta Karma Concert, if I'm not making this up, one is called the Rock Bottom. The other one is called the Bitter End. And they have a new one that just opened. It's just called Rotten. That's all. That's ready. And they have a sign outside. Try the rotten burger. I said, no, I don't think so. You know. So, you know, there we are. What will it be? The bitter end. The what was the other one? The bitter end. The rock bottom. Or will I go just hang out at Rotten? And they have what is it? What is the other? The Hard Rock Cafe. So I was always thinking between a rock and a hard place. You know. So this is their life. So I remember chanting. This was a few years ago. Harinam, New Year's Eve. This guy comes out of if you look at it, they're just eating bones and feathers. I mean, you look at the piles of, you just think, oh my God. I mean, if you found this stuff on your doorstep, you'd have to throw it all out and get cow dung, you know, but there they are snacking on it with a little special fork, you know. So they go, oh, what is this? But anyway, this man came out of this restroom, tuxedo, and stopped me. I was in the front, so he stopped me and he said, and gave me $100 bill. And I said, thank you, sir. And he said, you know, he said, I'm in there with three other couples. He said, dinner, when you throw in wine, is going to be, for each couple, about $400 a couple. He said, and then, you know, we're going over to the Grant Hotel for the, you know, exclusive black tie dinner. He said, tickets are $500 a couple. He said, then after that, we'll go to the after party at the W. He said, that's probably another $300 or $400. He said, by the time I get home, he said, this is going to cost me, you know, for my whole, you know, just my wife and myself, probably around $2,000 to $3,000 for this night. He said, and that restaurant is full of people doing the exact same thing. He said, and you know what? He said, you guys, meaning the devotees, said, you're the only ones who are happy. And I countered, given my nature, I said, and you know what, sir? We're doing it for free. So I was thinking about it this New Year's, that there we are. I've been chanting on that corner for 30 years. And so many things I've changed. I mean, my body, I mean, it's nothing, you know, like Dravida. You know Dravida Prabhu. He's a wonderful devotee, you know. And I don't know how old he is. But he's, you know, I've noticed, you know, and I'm right behind him. He's getting a little older. So he'll lead the kirtan, he'll chant and dance. And then he and I, you know, I'll drop off the devotees and we drop him off. And he'll say, give me a minute, Prabhu, give me a minute, Prabhu. Because he's got to walk up these stairs, you know, and he gets his knees and he gets, all right, then off he goes, you know. And so everything, you know, I'm nicked and scraped by time, no doubt about it. I'm not, in so many ways, I'm not what I was before. And in many ways, I'm grateful for that. But the point is, but I'm still chanting the same thing. I'm doing the exact same thing. And it's sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. And here are these people. They've tried everything possible. They've remodeled that downtown. The fashions have changed. They've gone this, that. They've pierced everything they can imagine. They've, you know. And there it is. They're still at rock bottom at the, you know, and here I am, you know, by Krishna's grace. So the simple point I'm trying to make is that Giriraj Maharaj told me this story. He said that the Prabhupada had trained him, you know, for turning off lights. I remember Prabhupada was circumambulating the Krishna Balaram Mandir one time. And Prabhupada, you know how you can go there, that Pradakshina path. You go between, I guess it's between the Prabhupada's house and the Shikars are there, the temple, back of the temple. Prabhupada got right to that corner. He stopped and he said, they have eyes, but they do not see. And then Prabhupada walked on. And then he came around, exact same place, stopped and said, they have eyes, but they do not see. We're thinking, you know, he's seeing Krishna Balaram and Raman Reti, you know, what, you know, he's hearing the flutes. I mean, who knows? I mean, Prabhupada's seeing Narada Muni. You know, who knows what Prabhupada's seeing? Again, third time Prabhupada came, he said, they have eyes, but they do not see. And he swung with his cane and pointed that in the broad daylight, all the lights were on for Krishna Balaram Mandir. And we're all big managers. I mean, I was a little temple president, but, you know, and nobody had the wits about them to even see that the lights were on, you know. So what was I going to say about that? So Giriraj Maharaj had been trained by Prabhupada to shut off the lights. So he came back late from a preaching engagement, and he saw that the lights were in Prabhupada's quarters. And Prabhupada's, usually taken rest. So it's maybe 1 o'clock, 12:30, something like that. So, you know, Prabhupada may have gotten up maybe 2 o'clock, 1:30. But, you know, at this particular time, Giriraj Maharaj thought, well, Prabhupada's asleep. Someone's left the light on in his room. So he just reached around the corner, flipped the light switch. Light went off. He heard this, oh, it was Prabhupada. So he turned the light back on and apologized. And Prabhupada was already up translating. So Giriraj Maharaj came in and he said, Prabhupada, I'm sorry, I thought you were resting and I didn't want... Prabhupada said, no, he said, I don't sleep very much. He said, practically speaking, he said, I don't sleep much. He said, I don't eat much. He said, I'm an old man, there's no question of defending or sex. He said, then Prabhupada paused and chuckled and said, maybe I'm liberated. But Prabhupada actually went on to say, Prabhupada says a similar thing. Prabhupada says he doesn't eat much. He works all the time. He doesn't sleep, so he's working all the time. He said, I don't cost much. Prabhupada said, very good investment for my disciples. You know, well, we probably asked for practically nothing and produced these literature and opened these temples and managed the whole society. You know, it's very good investment for his disciples, no doubt about it. But the point I was going to make is that another, along these lines, Prabhupada said, we don't advertise it. He said, but practically speaking, our movement is meant to bring these things to zero. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Don't worry. And actually, we're rolling out the new menu for the temple. One chickpea a day. That's not the point here. The point I'm trying, but I meet devotees all the time, or often I should say, who, older devotees, and they'll talk about all the early days and how it was so blissful. And they'll go on to say, you know, it's my temple president's fault, or it's the GBC's fault, or my wife's fault, or global warming. I mean, whatever it is, they'll find something that's the reason. And the other day I thought about it, and I asked this devotee, I said, what were you doing? How were you living at that time? The guy said, I was living in the temple, and I was going to Mangalartik every day, and I was chanting my rounds, and I was following the principles. I was going on Sankirtan. I said, think that had anything to do with it? In other words, it's a fact. It's one of the Prabhupada calls it the law of reciprocity. That yeyatam mamprapadyante, that as we surrender, Krishna reciprocates. So, the simple point I'm trying to make in a roundabout way is that we're the opposite. We're the opposite of everything they think. We dress the complete opposite. I was watching those remembrance tapes, and Prabhupada was on a walk, and the devotees in San Francisco, Malati and some of the other Matajis, they're all wearing saris. And across the street, there are some girls in miniskirts. And it was very cold. And the girls in the men, not picking on girls, I mean, men do so many foolish things. Maya is an equal opportunity employer. But the girls in the miniskirts were looking at the girls, the ladies in saris, and thinking, that's crazy. And the devotees in the saris were looking at the girls in the miniskirts, saying, this is crazy. And Prabhupada picked up on it. Prabhupada laughed, and Prabhupada said, yes, they are performing their austerity for illusion. You're performing your austerity for Krishna. Austerity will be there. There's no question about it. So everything we do, they can't figure us out. But the simple point I'm trying to make is that there is another dimension. We are not this body. We are the soul within. The happiness does not come from this random combination of these senses. It comes by devotional service, to the degree that we're in contact with Krishna and pleasing Krishna. Krishna's the master of the senses. To the degree that we please Krishna, we become satisfied. And this is people are starving for this. I mean, Swabha, we were just in the restaurant for a few minutes. And then, Prabhupada said when you're on a walk and you say to someone, good morning, and they say, good morning, it actually is a British saying. Prabhupada was saying, it's a British saying. It's like a benediction. May you have a good morning. We're wishing somebody, I wish you have a good morning. Prabhupada said, good morning means, in the material world, nothing horrible has happened yet. And, we think that, but you talk to these people. There was that one lady, Swavash just asked her, how is the prasadam? And she just gushed. She's a nice lady, but her husband has Lou Gehrig's disease, and she's taking care. First off, you lose control of all your muscles until it ultimately kills you, and your brain is completely clear. You have complete consciousness. It's not like Alzheimer's. Ronald Reagan's joke about Alzheimer's. It's not so bad. Now I can hide my own Easter eggs. You forget everything, so you don't really mind. You don't know your condition. But with Lou Gehrig's disease, your condition. It's unbelievable torture. She said he's always a macho man, always in charge. And here he has to become, gradually completely dependent upon others. And the children are all envious, and they all want the will. I'm not making it up. In other words, just like if you just touch a gulab jam and all the juice comes out, we just touch this lady. And all of her anxiety. And then there's that other person, that guy. We asked him. Oh, so boss asked. I told him, listen, we're going to have a meeting. You better stop asking these questions. We asked this other guy. So boss just asked him, how are you? And what was his story? His wife had just died. And he was trying to move to the Philippines. And he had a dog that had this and that. Oh, man, too much information, But they're all like that. Again, I was going to mention Kripa Mayuga. And she said, it's amazing. And she works for a very... so-called high-class firm. She's getting people from La Jolla, which is our equivalent of Beverly Hills or Point Loma or whatever it is, Palos Verdes or whatever it is, And they got horrible problems. So the simple message here, Krishna is very kind. And when Krishna acts as Hari, one devotee was telling me, actually, Jayapataka Maharaj, he was saying that there was some decision that had been made and by the devotees, and this devotee wasn't, Jayapataka Maharaj wasn't very happy with it. And Prabhupada's response was that, whatever you've decided collectively, you should execute. Whatever the Vaishnavas, and if there's some fault, Krishna will rectify. And Jayapataka Maharaj offered his obeisances. But he was thinking in his mind, yeah, but how long will that take? You know, because we think, oh, Krishna will fix it, but how, you know? And as soon as he came up, Prabhupada slammed his hand down and said, but not in your time, in his time. So, so we have to let Krishna work in his own way. And as long as we, the simple fact of the matter is that happiness will not come from this combination of material senses. And it will not come from our material circumstances. It will come to the degree that we give up all of this and we simply serve Krishna. And that happiness, you look at the six Goswamis. You look at Jayananda. If you saw Jayananda, I saw Jayananda on his disappearance, you know. I wasn't here, but I saw him in Tijuana when he was, you know, he couldn't even move. And they had him wheel, he had leukemia, they had him wheel him out. He was giving Bhagavad Gita class in his wheelchair. We went down to visit him, and we thought, oh my God, he wasn't in his room. We thought, what's happened? He said, oh, he's out in the solarium. He was giving Bhagavad Gita class in his wheelchair. So, you said, well, one of my favorite people, Bhakti Raghava Maharaj, you know, who had that bad leg and it was on the crutches. And when they attacked, those dacoits attacked the deities, they thought Radharani was solid gold, Taptaganchana Gorange. So they wanted to steal Radharani and melt her down, and the devotees to protect the temple, you know, and they were throwing these bombs. They take a bunch of nails and they put it explosive and wrap it in tape, you know, Indian technology, the original dirty bomb. And then they light the thing and throw it. It's full of nuts and bolts. It's very, you know, horrendous thing. So he was trying to protect the deities. They threw one of these things, blew his leg right off. You know what his response was? See, you know, I was thinking about getting this thing removed anyway. It cost me so much difficulty. And Krishna's taking care of it. You know, it's phenomenal. I mean, actually, he was suffering. There's no doubt he was suffering. But for the devotee, he thinks, I mean, not that Prabhupada said that we're fearless, we're not fools. I mean, you know, we should take care of our health. We should protect devotees. We should, you know, all these things. I'm not saying that. But in the ultimate issue, we should, the Krishna's Hari, and he's pushing, and he's ultimately taking away all of these things, because it's meant to come to zero. And when it comes to zero, we will become fully happy, in any condition. I'll end here, because the time is there. But I've mentioned this before, so thank you for your patience, but it always moves me. Naveen Krishna's father, Dr. Khurana, was a very nice man, and he was a top doctor in Delhi. And Prabhupada liked him. Prabhupada stayed at his house a couple times. He and his wife were very, very nice. And Prabhupada's at the inn there, you know, Prabhupada, like his father, Prabhupada just decided to stop eating. It was the inn, and Prabhupada just stopped eating. He was taking a little charnamrita. So, and skin and bones, practically speaking, literally like Ranti Dev, skin and bones, like, you know, just nothing. So Naveen called his father and said, please, just go to Delhi. Go to Vrindavan. You know, it's 3.5 hours, whatever it is. Just go to Delhi. Go to Vrindavan and see if there's anything you can do for Prabhupada. So immediately the father went. And, you know, and there's little black ambassadors, maybe a few cream-colored ambassadors. He got his doctor friends, and they went little caravans, 6 or 7 doctors. And he told me the story personally, Dr. Khurana. He said they came into Prabhupada's room, and he was shocked. Because Prabhupada, you know, I mean, I've gone on morning walks with Prabhupada, and you had trouble keeping up. Prabhupada moved at a good clip, you know, and Prabhupada was, you know, he felt like he could, you know, Prabhupada sat on the Vyasa Sana, he was like a lion, you know. I remember Prabhupada being here in L.A., right over here, and this professor came from Caltech and challenged, and he said, you know, Prabhupada gave, you know, Prabhupada's talk, question and answer. Sukadev, you were probably there. And this man stood up, and he was a professor. He had some of his students with him. And his message was that, you know, this is, you know, bhakti is for sentiment. Vedanta is the real thing. Silent meditation, impersonal, like that. And he went on for some time. And Prabhupada, we had Jagannath on the altar. I think maybe we had small Radhakrishna. And Prabhupada didn't even look at him. Prabhupada had his hand in his beadbed. The Vyasa-sama was up, like where Gornatai was, like three in a line, like this. Prabhupada wouldn't even deign to look at the man. Prabhupada just chanting, looking at, you know, with that regal profile of Prabhupada, chanting, you know, and waited. The guy ran out of steam. And then Prabhupada turned, and it was the most amazing verse after verse after verse, Vedanta Sutra, Upanishad, this, that, because that was his point, you know, Gita, you know, Fifth Veda, like that. Prabhupada just nailed him with the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, and it was just like driving a pillar into the, you know, a stake into the ground. Prabhupada had his hand in his bead bag. Bam, bam, bam. And this guy, you could just see. And after a while, he was standing, very arrogant. And after some time, he was on his knees, you know, halfway. And then he was sitting, and he was so smashed, if he could have melted into the ground. And then Prabhupada finished, you know. He said, "Do you have any more questions?" And the man raised his hand to his credit. And the man said, "Swamiji, can we have kirtan?" In other words, he got the point. That was the point, that kirtan was sentiment. And he understood, and he came to the point, "Swamiji, please, can we have kirtan?" He understood, you know. So, you know, to see Prabhupada like that, and then to see Prabhupada just on his... And Naveen's father said that the skin pushing on the bones, you would have been writhing in pain. An ordinary person, Prabhupada was asking for a little massage. Prabhupada took a little massage like that. And when Naveen's father came in, he said it was just like seeing Bhishma on the bed. When he came in, Prabhupada asked, "How are you? How's your family? Oh, you've traveled a long distance. You must be tired." He called, who's our friend there? You know, Dhananjaya. He called Dhananjaya over and said, "Please, you know, let them, they should take some prasadam." He said, "We need to take some rest, take some prasadam, come back, we'll talk." Naveen's father began to cry. Now, this man was very reserved. But when he saw that someone in that condition, completely indifferent, he asked Swamiji, "How are you?" He said, Prabhupada just held up his arm, you know. The skin was hanging like, "Well, you know, where's the question of how I am, you know?" And so Prabhupada asked for the benediction. When the devotees asked Prabhupada to stay in New York, in other words, we have seen these things. Transcendence would have remained a theoretical state for us. But we've seen it. We've seen it in the great devotees. We've seen devotees leave in our own life. We've seen devotees leaving this world or go through horrendous events in their life and simply take shelter of Krishna and come out the better for it. We've seen it again and again and again. And we've seen people chase after so many things. And there they are. They're on their fifth wife and this and that. What happened? So I guess we should end there. But I also wanted to say I wanted to thank the devotees here in New Dwarka, because it is a fact, people are looking for ashraya, they are looking for shelter. And any way we can attract them, they come to that beautiful gift shop, they come for shopping. But they come and they associate with the devotees, they hear the kirtan, they see the beautiful books, they ask some question. You know, we're in anxiety, you know, because we're all stewed up about this and that. But compared to the anxiety they're in, so they can see that the devotees are peaceful. Did they just by seeing the devotees, how we're dressed? Well, who is it who asked us? You know, to us is great with people. You said to that one guy, "Oh, you look sharp," or you know, you get in, the guy immediately felt very happy, you know. And they said, "You look good too." And then, yeah, we're always in fashion, you know. We never have to worry what's in, what's out, you know. Maybe we have summer. I have summer dress, winter dress. In the summertime, I wear cotton. In the winter, because it's a little cooler, I wear silk, because silk is a little warmer. So that's, I have to make a fashion change once a year. I change from cotton to silk. But it's the same thing. So, wonderful prasadam. They come in and they see these beautiful deities. We don't know what they experience. But I can tell you, they walk in and they see these beautiful deities and they think, we had a guy who was investigating us because he couldn't understand how a small church our size was spending so much money on flowers. From the IRS. It's a long story. But he came, no, it's a true story. He came, not from the IRS, from the California Franchise Tax Board, state tax. And he came and, you know, he was hassling me, this, that, you know, and I was thinking, "Oh, geez, you know, well, will you come visit me in jail? At least somebody send me prasadam," you know? And because we'd made typical devotees in those days, we'd made some errors and this and that. So I took him down to the temple, and when he saw the deities, all the vases and all the garlands, something happened. He said, "Oh," he said, "this is what you spend." He said, "This is beautiful." He said, and I said, "Yeah, and we change the garlands twice a day, and we do this and that, and the vases." And he just walked back to my office, and he had a stapler in his briefcase. It was so blissful. He just went staple. He stapled all the four corners of the file, meaning it was shut. I said, "What does that mean?" He says, "It means that I'm going to put it where the sun doesn't shine." He said, "Nobody's ever going to see this, and you'll never hear from me again, you know?" And I packed him up some prasadam, and off the guy went, you know? Because his heart changed when he saw the deities. There's no question about it. And I mean, Prabhu, it happens all the time. So, by maintaining these beautiful deities, wonderful. People come. The place is clean. It's neat. It's attractive. I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. Prabhupada personally had me edge these lawns. When Prabhupada got out of his car, he would look and make sure the edge of the line on the grass was straight. Now, is Prabhupada, what do they call it? Prabhupada says, they accuse the Vaishnavas of having a cleansing phobia. You know? But Prabhupada wanted the front of the building. Now, Prabhupada's garden was all long. He liked that to grow. He liked that a little bit long. You know, we think we should get a cow or something, you know. But for the front of the temple, he wanted its everything like military ship shape. Because people in Kali Yuga, they're so superficial. Prabhupada said in previous ages, people wore torn clothing. People would expect, here's a sadhu, here, they're renounced. But not in Kali. Prabhupada said, you have to dress nicely, not opulently, but clean and neat. Because then people will respect. Otherwise, they won't respect. And if they don't respect you as a person, they won't hear your message. So, I want to finish here. But just this beautiful temple, beautiful deity worship, these variated programs. Don't think it's a mundane thing or why we're just selling stuff in the gift shop or we're just working in a restaurant. No, it's completely transcendental. And people will come and see that there is another type of happiness. There is another way of living beyond this futility of material life. What to speak of when they get a book and they open it up. I said I would finish. This I will finish. And if you're not, you can shut the mic off. Shama Sundar told me, and Mukunda Marsh told me that Shama Sundar told him, that George Harrison told him, that George Harrison's friend told him. Okay. George Harrison's friend was a top sculptor. He's the guy that got the marble for the original. You know, Shama Sundar tells the story. They went and got the marble for the first altar at the Bury Place. That man was hired to carve a bust of the, on her, whatever it was, centennial. Well, not centennial, she's not that old, but whatever, jubilee, whatever it was, diamond jubilee for 50 years, whatever it was, for Queen Elizabeth. Maybe it's 25 years, I forget. So he was a friend of George Harrison. He was hired to carve this bust of her, and she has to sit for the, you know, and they have to sit a couple hours each setting. So Mukunda Marsh, you know, and Shama Sundar, they said, give her Bhagavad Gita. Give her Bhagavad Gita. This is Queen Elizabeth, the current Queen Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth. So give her Bhagavad Gita. So they gave it to George Harrison. George Harrison gave it to this sculptor. I forget his name now. He gave it to Queen Elizabeth. She was sitting there reading Bhagavad Gita. And she turned to him, looked up and said, Krishna, the friend of everyone. Now, wouldn't that be wonderful? You know, you can imagine, who's her friend? You know, everyone's trying to get something. But we don't know what happens when people read these books, what changes in their hearts. So, as being instructed here, whatever you may get in the material world by material circumstances is pale, temporary, and torn from us. And if we can turn to the transcendental nature, everything is permanent, ever fresh. So we should in there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. And now we get to take prasad. What a nice movement. Sign me up. One tick. I will, Virginia. Thank you.